This is Chris Dufault. I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Crookston, Minnesota. I'm pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good morning, Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Don Wick with Randy Conan in studio. We'll have updates from Whitney Pittman and Tyler Donaldson as well. A person in Texas is being treated for what may be the first case of highly pathogenic avian influenza in people. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said the only symptom in this individual was a case of pink eye. The patient is being treated with flu medication and was told to isolate. This person was in contact with dairy cows infected with avian influenza. This would be the first time high-path avian influenza made the leap from birds to cattle to people. The CDC said the risk to the general public is low.
Well, when news came out about the discovery of avian flu in a human being during the last hour of trade, Advanced Trading Risk Management Advisor Tommy Grisafi said the reaction was immediate.
Someone could have lost a lot of money on this move. Someone could have made a lot of money on this move. Cattle at the CME group went limit down. Now, what you might not know or remember is we have much wider limits than we did in the past. Limit, and I'll bring Brady in, but I want to say it's like 675 traded, huge volume here in the last few minutes.
Advanced trading broker Brady Huck, who also raises cattle, describes this news as a major market-moving event.
A lot of uncertainty going forward here with how that impacts the world of beef, but never a good headline to see when you see something like that, and shook the markets up here. And funds are long, you know, funds are long this market, and they're seems like we've been waiting for a reason to sell it and liquidate position. It doesn't take much to rattle funds and move that market.
USDA also confirmed additional cases of high-path avian influenza in dairy cattle. The latest announcement identified the virus in a dairy herd in New Mexico and five additional herds in Texas. There are now 11 dairy herds confirmed to have avian influenza since the first case was announced just over a week ago. Farmers are being asked to notify their veterinarian if their cows display symptoms, including poor appetite and a downturn in milk production. Additional biosecurity measures are being advised, including restricting access to the farm.
There's a thin line of snow showers being seen this morning, extending from Sisseton in northeast South Dakota to Fergus Falls, Detroit Lakes, and Bagley, Minnesota. A mix of snow and rain is evident in south-central and southeastern Minnesota. Winds are going to pick up today and should be the strongest over eastern North Dakota and the Red River Valley.
In the first weekly crop progress report of the season, USDA said topsoil moisture in North Dakota is rated 53% adequate to surplus. 47% of the winter wheat is in good condition. Hay supplies are 88% adequate to surplus. North Dakota calving progress is 36% complete. That's equal to the five-year average.
In Minnesota, topsoil moisture supplies are 62% adequate to surplus. 6% of the oat crop is planted, which is almost 2 weeks ahead of the five-year average. Very little field work is done with the winter storm that hit the state last week.
In the weekly crop progress report, winter wheat in South Dakota rated 47% good to excellent. 1% of the spring wheat and 10% of the oats are planted. Topsoil moisture is rated 61% adequate to surplus in South Dakota.
Beaver Creek, Minnesota farmer Pete Bakken says alfalfa seeding could start as soon as this week.
This week, potentially, and probably next week, we plant some alfalfa with an oats cover crop and whatnot. And we're hoping to get that done, and we typically shoot for planting corn on the 20th of April, so that's right around the corner. And with this rain that we've gotten, one, we knew that it could rain or precipitate at least, so we were terribly, terribly dry here in the southwest Minnesota part of the state, but now we're kind of recharging at least some of the topsoil moisture, so we should at least get the seed to germinate and get the plant out of the ground and hope for timely rains after that.
The frost in the area means moisture is staying in place as it falls.
Probably 3 weeks ago, I pushed a 6-inch post in the ground with the payloader. It had a pointed end on it, but it went right in the ground. So we haven't had frost here for probably a month. And for it being so dry, yes, absolutely everything that we've gotten that has fallen from the sky has gone in the ground.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. Many ranchers are in the midst of calving season. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Whitney Pittman has more.
Carrington Research Center-based NDSU Extension livestock specialist Carl Hoppe says making sure calves are nursing and stay dry are the most important aspects of keeping calves healthy.
Making sure these young calves have gotten up to nurse is really important, and looking at the udders to make sure they have is the first step to do during calving. Of course, when you have excess mud, excess rain, excess snow, that leads to more of a challenge, and little calves can nurse mud or get mud into their mouth somehow, and that can lead to scours or other sicknesses. And the best way to get around all that, of course, is more bedding or putting cattle out on sod that's dry, and that's a pretty tall order. Of course, the best order of the whole thing is to just have more sunshine and dry ground.
Watching for and preventing navel ill is another thing to consider. Hoppe also warns that any calving sheds need to be well ventilated.
You could somehow put iodine in the navel or around the navel to reduce infection in the navel. That's always an important thing to do if a person can do it. Sometimes the mothers are pretty protective and you can't have the opportunity to do that, but you'd always watch for swollen joints and that type of thing, and antibiotic can be needed to prevent infection from spreading even any further. A dry place for calves to be at, a calving barn or a calving shed, is always important. Calves like to congregate amongst themselves, so a spot where they can get away from the rest of the cow herd is good, a high, dry location. You got to be careful about having these little shelters because there may not be enough ventilation in those shelters, and calves can actually get more humidity in that situation and end up having more pneumonia problems.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Whitney Pittman on the Red River Farm Network.
North Dakota Senator John Hoeven is hosting a roundtable event with leaders from North Dakota State University, Grand Farm, and the Agricultural Research Service today. Hoeven plans to focus on North Dakota's role in agricultural research. That meeting will be held on the NDSU campus.
Construction of the Peltier Complex at NDSU is on schedule. Vice President of Agricultural Affairs Greg Lardy is looking forward to unveiling the new facility to the public.
It should be done in June, and we're looking forward to getting our folks all moved in over there. It'll house our cereal science, food science, meat science programs, the Northern Crops Institute, and a variety of other activities that are kind of, you know, related to end-use quality or end-use utilization for North Dakota commodities, so we're very excited about what that building is going to entail.
The new building will offer a more collaborative environment that will benefit students in various programs.
It's going to mean access to state-of-the-art facilities. You know, it'll be all the labs there will be food safe, and so it'll be HACCP plans associated with the parts of the building where we're doing actual work with food. So, you know, we will be able to have our students trained in a state-of-the-art facility that resembles modern, you know, milling and baking and food science capabilities. So we're definitely, I think students will definitely notice the difference there in terms of the types of facilities they're going to be in for learning and conducting some of their graduate research.
The Minnesota House Agriculture Committee will review the state response to high-path avian influenza today. The 1 o'clock hearing will be timely with the recent expansion of the virus to dairy cattle and one person.
According to Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, container ships are being diverted away from the port of Baltimore.
It is an important port and an important system of the East Coast ports. Now, a lot of the goods that come on or off there go as part of runs where ships also visit the ports of New York and New Jersey and Virginia. And so right now, I think there are already diversions taking place to those and other East Coast ports, helping to absorb some of that need.
The port of Baltimore is a major conduit for the delivery of farm machinery parts and technology.
That bridge collapse on the East Coast may also impact the fertilizer market in the Midwest. 10% of the imported UAN moves through the Port of Baltimore. The temporary shutdown of the port will slow down the movement of UAN, but shippers should be able to find other alternatives. That port, not a major hub for other types of fertilizer.
A slow parade of tractors stopped traffic in London yesterday in a protest over Brexit rules and trade deals that may impact British farmers. Large-scale protests have been common throughout the European Union in recent months, but this is the first to happen in England. The British farmers claiming new trade deals with Australia and New Zealand will flood their market. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Good morning. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. With increasing biofuel demand, the United Soybean Board is exploring new options for checkoff investments towards sustainability. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has more.
United Soybean Treasurer Brent Gatton says that the primary topic of discussion at the recent soy checkoffs board meeting was to find other options for checkoff dollar investments that would help move the pile. Bringing soybean farmers together for that discussion was integral.
We're continuing our FY25 build-out that we actually started at our December board meeting. So we have 77 directors on our board. And out of the 77 directors, they're split up into three priority working groups. It's health and nutrition, innovation technology, and infrastructure and connectivity. And in these groups this week, our primary objective was to get in these work groups, farmers get together, collaborate, brainstorm, put together their wish list of items and areas that they would like to see us invest checkoff dollars for FY25. So whether that be through research, education, or promotion, just trying to come up with ideas of ways to move the pile.
Gatton says that much of the focus going forward is on biofuels, but that finding other uses for meal is still an ongoing process.
One of the main things that we really want to focus on is, you know, biofuel demand is just peaking up there for us, but we've got to do something with the meal. So now we're trying to find new ways to move the pile of meal, you know. And one of the most exciting things that we invested in here recently was the Port of Grays Harbor. The investment and infrastructure study that we did there, we were able to increase our soybean meal exports to Southeast Asia from 3 million metric tons to 6 million metric tons. So it's ideas and things like that that farmers come up with that just help move the pile and give a positive return on investment for farmers back here in the United States.
That was United Soybean Board Treasurer Brent Gatton. For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
USDA's weekly export inspections report shows 1.4 million metric tons of corn inspected for export during the week ending March 28th. That's 14% more than the previous week, 30% more than the same week a year ago. Soybean inspections totaled 414,000 metric ton, 47% below the previous week, 17% below the same week last year. Wheat inspections, 499,000 metric tons, 15% more than the previous week, and well above 196% the same week 1 year ago. For the marketing year, corn inspections are 33% ahead of last year's pace, soybean inspections 18% less than a year ago, wheat inspections 12% behind the year ago pace. Checking those markets, we have Minneapolis wheat, the May contract right now as we speak, 1 3/4 higher at 636.5. Chicago wheat for May down 2.25. Hard red winter wheat, May down 3.25. Or even money for the May corn contract, 435.5. New crop corn down by 0.25. Soybeans, May a penny higher, 1186.75. November soybeans, 1.25 higher at 1183.75. Checking the farm calendar, coming up April 18th to the 20th is the South Dakota State FFA Convention in Brookings. A little different time schedule. They're going Thursday for a start for this year's convention for the South Dakota FFA. And the Minnesota FFA Convention is April 21st through the 23rd. That, of course, will be taking place in the Twin Cities. You'll have the coverage from both of those meetings right here on the Red River Farm Network. Have yourself a great Tuesday. This is the Red River Farm Network.